Okay. As we move into the next section on dimensional living and thinking, I want you to make a comment. Someone on the call has a radio going in the background. And so if you could turn that, if there's a audio device playing in the background, if you could turn that down, it would make it a lot more pleasant for the rest of us on the call here. Awesome. Thank you. Okay. When we think about dimensional living, I recognized this week, I saw something that happened, Bruce, that spoke to specifically what you were just talking to. When, you know, do people want help? And I think that this, my thoughts here are that people will say that they want help, but they don't always know what it's going to take to change. Sometimes the change is more painful than what their issue is that they're dealing with. And until the problem is more painful than what the change is, oftentimes they will stay where they're at. I've dealt with people this week that have said, yes, I want to change my life in this area. And we give them an opportunity, and yet they fail or they sabotage themselves. And so when people say they want to change, move to a different dimension, it is a challenge. And this is in our personal life and in business life. There is a concept called paradigm shift that has to take place when people go from one dimension to another. And we all see the world and every situation through a certain paradigm. And when that paradigm has to change, it is connected to other patterns of thinking or habits in our life. So as we talk about dimensional living and even changing, I'd like to have some of you share some of the processes that you've had to go through in shifting from one dimension to another.
Oh, Steve, that's a great segue. This is Patrick. I had a shift that actually happened when I went to the last event in 2 months ago in Chicago, and it happened. We were actually out at dinner with everyone, and I happened to be talking to Mark, and you know, I asked. You know, he was asking me what I was struggling with, and I said, you know, I think the biggest problem is that, I said, nobody would ever say this to me because, you know, they don't see it. I said, but I'm lazy. I don't do as much as what I could be doing. And, you know, being a driver, most people don't see that with me. In fact, nobody would probably ever say it to me, but I know it's there, and I know that if I wanted to get to the next level, I need to work a lot harder and use everything that I'm capable of doing, and I know that I'm not. And, you know, he said something to me that was very difficult, which I don't think even my wife probably would have ever said to me. But it's what changed my way of thinking, even though it was hard to deal with because it was true. And what he said was, he said to me, he says, well, you don't have enough fear in God. And I said, at first I got really defensive, like, no, that's not it. And then I realized, well, number one, that I got so defensive, it probably was true. And I started thinking about it, and he explained it and said, well, you know, if you do believe in God and you believe that, you know, you have this big life vision, he says, then how in the world would you not be doing everything within your power to achieve your life vision if that's what you were put here to do? And I realized that, yeah, I wasn't, and it probably was due to that, because You know, if I cared more about what I was put here to do, then I'd be doing it. And that made a huge shift in my life. That was, you know, to me, I like went to a new dimension from that point forward. So that was an experience that I had, but it was very difficult to get through, and I'm still getting through it, and there's still challenges with it. But I found that sometimes it takes something very difficult or painful to get to that next level to deal with.
Okay, I agree with you. And Bruce, to the comment that you made at the end of the last segment, when someone comes face to face with something like that in their life, it is a it could almost be like a catharsis moment where everything that they have been, the way they've been living their life, the way they've been thinking, the way they see the world, has now been put up on an examination table, and they begin to see flaws in it. And that defensiveness that Patrick talked about, that was there when Mark made that comment to him, can we say that everyone is going to deal with some defensiveness at some point or another when they're shifting from one dimension to another?
Is that a question or is that a statement?
Yeah, that's a question. Do you feel that everyone is going to deal with that challenge?
Steve, I think it's a great question. It wasn't the question that you asked at the end of the last segment. You said, do you believe everybody wants to be helped? So that I said yes to. This, do I feel like there's going to be some defensiveness? Absolutely. You know, what I do believe is, and I respect Patrick's share, I think it was great. So I think that there will be some gut-wrenching experiences. I have a different experience. When I did the Landmark Forum the first time, I felt like the leader was challenging somebody else, not me. And finally he attended to me, he said, yes. I said, I felt like you were challenging that person. And, you know, he walked all the way around. He was about 5'4", and he was from India. And he looked at me and he said, I am only a little brown man making noise. And in that moment, I really got that I could choose to take his noise and make use of it, or I could choose to ignore it. And it didn't have to make any difference. And that was a much more simple, much more gentle way. And I think both of them exist in the world, but I do think both of them exist. So I do think it's incumbent sometimes, if we as an organization are killing off a certain segment of people, that at some point it might make sense for us to take a look and say, why are we killing off that segment of people?
Okay. Well, that's a good question. And I'm going to defer some of that to Mark for another time, because he has dealt with that more than what I have. So for this morning, let's look at, in the aspect of dimensional living, what are some questions that you have to help you in making shifts in your dimensional thinking and dimensional living? Let's go ahead and start with Carly. Are you still on?
Carly is not. So right now in this segment, we have yourself, Patrick, Bruce, and Teresa has also joined us.
Okay. Well, Patrick, let's go ahead and start with you then. What are some questions or challenges that you have in dimensional thinking and living that we can speak to this morning?
Right now, the biggest struggle or challenge that I'm having, and I know it's going to take a big shift, is building a team that can operate without me. And the struggle I'm having with doing that is, I think it's twofold. Part of it has to do with my personality being a drive. Well, both of them have to do with my personality, but I think But part of it has to do with the fact that being a driver, I tend to, you know, for me it's quicker sometimes just to solve problems to get it done, but what that does is creates a reliance of other people on me, and then they don't need to think for themselves to solve those problems. And then another part of it is getting through to people where, you know, people get very defensive. And, you know, in my opinion, this is just my opinion, but I found, you know, managing a lot of people, and, you know, I manage about 20 people right now, and most people, they don't want to hear the truth. Because when you tell them the truth, they get very defensive, and trying to get people to be coachable to the point of where you need behavior to change, because if the behavior doesn't change, you know, you're going to go out of business, or they're not going to be able to stay with you because you need to find someone that can do what you need them to do. And so trying to get that behavior to change and doing it in a way where they will actually be coachable has been a huge challenge for me. And Mark had suggested me, you know, trying some different personalities, which I may be able to work through. For me, it's like, you know, you go through the approach of being amiable and getting, you know, trying to get someone to, you know, encourage them and this and that, and that never seems to work for me, and maybe it's because I'm just terrible at being amiable, I don't know. Then you try the expressive approach, and, you know, you want to make things fun, and that never seems to work for me. Again, that could be because I'm bad at it. I try the analytical approach, which I'm pretty good at doing the analytical side, and that works for some people. Maybe that's because I'm a little better at it. And then the driver approach, which just basically blow everything up. And that seems to work pretty well. It gets a lot of people upset, but it does get the job done. So it would be a lot better, though, in my opinion, if we could be working as a team and it wouldn't be having to blow things up all the time. So I'm trying to figure out how to shift to the next level where I can actually do that without having to blow things up.
Okay. Something that I've observed Mark do a number of times is he will ask people, is it okay if I speak directly to things that I observe in your life that maybe you've never thought about? And I, just in my observation, I see that he's doing this to he's getting permission to speak into someone's life before he says something that might offend them. He gets permission. I would say that very few people have had that question asked of them, and then very few people have maybe seen it successful. I don't know, but is that something that you could do with the people that you're working with in asking them permission to speak directly to things that you see, and so that you can have a conversation about what you're observing? Could that be helpful?
I could see how that could be helpful, sure. Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. You know, I don't know if it'll make a difference, but it's certainly worth a try. I mean, it might open them up to being less defensive. More willing to
look. Okay, I've got a question for each of you on the call. If you know you're going to be talking to someone about something that they could get defensive on, if we present it and say, I would like to have a conversation about this because I recognize that we see things from two different perspectives, and I want to understand where you're coming from more. And then begin to ask questions to help them, to help understand them. Is that something that you all have ever tried to do?
I have not, but I have a very specific incident where that would be, I can see that going far better than I had planned the way I was going to do it. Actually, in a case with my brother, right, so in family too, and he's my little baby brother, so I often just kind of tend to just, you know, throw up all over him. and that doesn't work either. So I think that it would be really great, actually, to come at him and be like, you know, I think we have two different perspectives on this. I'd love to hear your perspective. And then, you know, instead of it being a you against me, we can come to terms on, you know, I see this and here's what I'm thinking. And then you have a much more open space, right, to have that conversation rather than the other party just feeling that they're, like, being attacked or something of that nature. I think that that's really great, Steve. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. There's a man by the name of Jeffrey Myers that has presented four questions to me years ago. He calls these the four deadly questions. First, he asks people, what do you believe about? And then you name the topic or the issue. And then the second question is, where did you get that information? And then the third question is, how do you know that that information is correct? And then the fourth question is, what happens if you're wrong? What are the consequences if you're wrong? Mm. He said those questions really follows the rule that he who asks the questions wins the argument, which in a lot of cases is not an argument. It's just that we see something in someone else's life that we want to help them to see. And so by asking questions, people find themselves often in a place where they cannot answer those questions because they have believed something because it's what they have grown up with. They can't defend it. It's just what they are. I grew up in a pastor's home in the church, going to church all the time, and I even find myself today at 56 years of age, when I think about something in the religious area of my life, I have no explanation of why I think that or believe that, because it's just what I grew up with, and I can't defend it, and so I really have to evaluate it.
Wow, so that's really powerful, yeah.
So for dimensional living, we start with ourselves, and as Mark asks us questions and we get presented with questions on these calls, it's a safe environment to be able to examine things. But then, Bruce, as you're talking with other people, wanting to help them, here's a question for you. Is there an art that we can develop in helping people to move through processes that they don't even understand what's going on?
Steve, I love the question. You know, I was debating. I got a white paper. It's about a presentation I gave to a lawyers group a number of years ago. It's called Generative Listening. It's really questioning that generates certain thinking, and it pretty much starts out with, you know, what are you up to? What do you want to accomplish? And there's a couple of fundamental questions. You know, do you want to be right, or do you want to be effective with the person? And so you could always get there by asking them questions. So it's not an argument, it's a question. It's kind of like a Socratic conversation. So, you know, I've been hesitant because it does come from my training at Landmark, and, you know, I do want to acknowledge that's pretty much where I got it, but it's been very effective. You know, do you want to be right or do you want to be effective with that person? And it pretty much models what we've been talking about here.
Okay. Anyone else have a thought here or a question?
Well, Bruce, I would like to see what kind of questions that you had come up with in the do you want to be right or do you want to be effective?
And it's really situationally specific. It's so cute. My son was 8. He's 26 now. And I took taken him bowling. And it was gutter ball after gutter ball after gutter ball. And I said to him, you know, I can help you. And he says, Dad, leave me alone. And a couple more frames of gutter ball, you know. And I said to him, Jeremy, I can help you, but I'll only do it if you want my help. So after two more frames of straight gutter balls, we adjusted his stance, and he more than doubled his high game. And the very next week, he had a friend of his who came, and he was gutter ball after gutter ball, and he says, you know, he's getting frustrated. My son says, Mason, my dad could help you, but he'll only do it if you're asking for help. So one of the things we learn is that when people, you know, kind of the same thing about people hate to be sold, but they love to buy. When you help people feel like they're going to get what they want, and they say that, you know, yeah, I would like help, now their ears are open, and you can contribute. And I think, Steve, you were saying how you heard Mark say to somebody, you know, I'm going to say something, and I'm not sure how you're going to take it, but I think it's going to support what you're up to. That's generative listening. You're creating the listening in another person. Does that help?
It does to me, and I think this goes back to a comment that Patrick said at the beginning. Does everyone want to be helped? That definition of want needs to be clarified. Some people might think that they want to be helped, but how deep is that? So
I think they want to be helped. I think they don't trust yet. They want to trust, but they don't yet trust that real help is coming and help that will support them getting what they want.
Or oftentimes, the help that is given to us doesn't look like the help that we wanted to get, right? I think that goes back to sometimes it's a little harder. Like, do you really want to change? Do you really want to take those steps to receive that help to make that change? So I think, you know, it looks oftentimes in my experience, it looks much different than I had thought it would.
Yeah, that's a good point, Joe. I would say, you know, is someone, you know, they say they want to be helped. So who is it on to make them open to wanting to be helped? Is it on the person who's trying to help them, or is it the person who wants to be helped? That would be my
question. That's a wonderful question. Yeah, it's a wonderful question. And it's really a dance, I think, the two are doing together. You know, and that's why we call it generative listening. So it's questioning that generates their being open to being helped. So it's a dance. They do it together.
Okay. Well, so moving through dimensional living is not an easy process, but it's very beneficial when we can get there. And so that is a challenge that, let's say we go back to the concept that we were talking about of building a client for life and maybe even a relationship for life. If we look at a person that has a situation in their life where they will say they need help and we feel we have something we can contribute to them, do we look at them as someone that we're just going to be a drive-by counselor, for lack of a better word, and then we're going on through life with or without them? Or are we looking at them as someone that, to a certain degree, we want to have in our life, not as a client, but as a part of our network, part of our circle of influence? Because we're going to pour a lot of value and time into that person. Is that a valid question to ask? how much do I want to be a part of their life ongoing? Not being judgmental, but just asking ourselves honestly, can I do this?
That's definitely a valid question, I think.
And my wife has a comment that she tells me a lot of times, that anytime you have a conversation with someone, it's like a tennis match. You volley the ball into their side of the court, and if they volley the ball back to you, then you have begun a conversation. But when you volley back into their court and the ball never comes back, they don't respond, or they change topics, or something else happens where you see that they're wanting to discontinue the conversation, then the volley's over. And let them determine how long they want that volley to go. So as we talk with people about different dimensions in their life, we'll probably find ourselves when we volley the ball into their court and it doesn't come back. But it doesn't mean that we have failed, because hopefully we have left them thinking about something that's going to impact them for good in the future. So that's a thought I think we can live with. I think we're wrapping up here at 8:30. Is there anything else that needs to be taken care of for this call?
I just want to say what a great discussion it was, so thank you.
I enjoy it as well. I hope everyone has benefited from this. And so then until next week, our challenge is to think about, not just in preparation for the August meeting, but you know, what we do, how are we making clients for life, and how can we help other people in making shifts in their dimensional thinking. So next week, maybe we can, we'll have thoughts to share on what we've experienced this upcoming week. Okay, Jill, I'll let you wrap things up for us, okay?
All right, very good. Well, thank you, Steve, for stepping in. You did a phenomenal job. It was a great conversation. So again, if you thought this was interesting,